Yekatra Foundation presents the Yekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Yekatra AI.
Introduction.
Welcome back to the Yekatra Dialogue. Today, we're diving deep into the life of someone many think they know, but maybe only superficially. Anna Eleanor Roosevelt.
That's right. Often called the First Lady of the World, but she was so much more than just a title.
Definitely. And our main source for this exploration is Blanche Wiesenkook's incredible three-volume biography, Eleanor Roosevelt.
Mm.
It's based on decades of research, really deep stuff, with amazing access to her personal letters.
And Cook's central argument is pretty groundbreaking, isn't it? She argues ER wasn't just supporting FDR.
Exactly, not an accessory.
No, a central figure in her own right, driving major political and social changes in the 20th century, Cook really shatters that simpler image.
She reveals this complex, passionate, and surprisingly radical woman.
Yeah.
So our mission today is to unpack that. How does a shy, insecure orphan, you know, feeling totally inadequate, become this powerhouse?
And what can her journey teach us now?
I'm really keen to explore how someone who seems so unsuited for the public eye became such a force.
And I think we'll see it's a story about resilience, definitely. The power of advocacy, too.
And how personal struggles can fuel something much bigger.
Precisely. How pain can be turned into purpose.
The chronological journey.
Okay, let's get into it. Her story, as you said, starts not with power, but with quite a lot of pain.
Deep personal pain, yeah. Born in 1884 into New York high society. Opulent, sure, but emotionally quite barren.
Her mother, Anna Hall, was famously beautiful but cold towards Eleanor, apparently nicknamed her Granny.
That's right, fostering this deep sense of inadequacy from the start. And her father, Elliot Roosevelt, Theodore Roosevelt's brother, was charming but struggled terribly with alcoholism.
And the losses came so young, her mother died when she was just 8.
Diphtheria. And her father, whom she adored, died less than 2 years later from complications of alcoholism.
So orphaned by 10, that's unimaginable.
And sent to live with her maternal grandmother. A very strict, formal household. No warmth there. Cook describes her as becoming this painfully shy, awkward, and fearful child.
Wow.
But here's the crucial part Cook emphasizes. This suffering didn't just wound her. It fundamentally shaped her character. It gave her this deep, almost cellular empathy for anyone who felt like an outsider, anyone who was suffering.
Because she knew that feeling herself.
Exactly. It became the bedrock of her later advocacy. It really makes you think about how adversity shapes us, doesn't it?
It really does. Okay, so things start to shift a bit with her education.
Yes, a major turning point. At 15, she's sent to Allenswood Academy, outside London. This was her first great liberation, as Cook puts it.
And the headmistress, Marie Sylvestre, she was key.
Hugely influential. Sylvestre was this charismatic, unconventional figure. She saw Eleanor's intellect and her compassionate nature, really valued her mind over, say, social graces.
Which must have been revolutionary for Eleanor.
Absolutely. Sylvestre encouraged critical thinking, challenging norms, and Eleanor just blossomed, became a leader among the students.
So she found her voice there in a way.
She did. Sylvester's progressive views on women's rights, on social justice, they gave Eleanor a model of an independent, powerful woman, something totally new to her.
But then she had to return to New York society.
Right, back into the debutante scene. And in 1905, she marries her fifth cousin, Franklin Delano Roosevelt.
FDR.
FDR. And for years, she really submerges herself. Wife, mother, 6 children, the one died in infancy. And largely under the thumb of her very formidable mother-in-law, Sarah Delano Roosevelt.
Just tough.
Cook calls it a period of quiet desperation. She's fulfilling expectations, but her own self was sort of on hold.
Pivotal turning points.
Okay, so she's in this conventional, maybe even stifling life. But then, as you mentioned, these seismic events happen, real turning points.
Absolutely. These moments didn't just nudge her life in a new direction. They fundamentally rerouted it.
And the first one, this is really personal. It's the discovery of Lucy Mercer's letters in 1918.
Yeah. She finds these love letters between Franklin and her own social secretary, Lucy Mercer, when he comes back from World War I service.
Devastating.
Utterly. A profound betrayal. It shattered the emotional core of their marriage. She actually offered Franklin a divorce.
Really? I didn't know that.
She did. But he refused, mainly for his political career. Sarah, his mother, also intervened heavily.
Wow.
But Cook argues this is the exact moment Eleanor starts consciously building her own life, separate from Franklin's emotional world. The old contract was broken.
So the pain kind of freed her.
Paradoxically, yes. It freed her to seek fulfillment, purpose, even intimacy elsewhere. Cook calls it the end of her private world and the true beginning of her public one. It's quite a statement.
That's powerful. Okay, turning point number two. Franklin's polio diagnosis in 1921.
Right. He gets polio at 39, paralyzed from the waist down. This was a potential career ender for an ambitious politician like FDR.
So how did that transform her life?
Well, initially, Sarah wanted him to retire, live as a country squire. But Eleanor, encouraged by FDR's political advisor, Louis Howe, saw another path.
She stepped in.
She stepped up. Howe urged her to become Franklin's political stand-in, his legs and eyes. She started traveling, giving speeches, joining organizations like the Women's Trade Union League.
Things she probably never imagined doing before.
Exactly. It forced her to confront and overcome that deep-seated shyness. She had to develop public speaking skills, political savvy. She wasn't just helping Franklin. She was becoming a political operator in her own right, finding her own agency.
It's amazing how these crises became catalysts.
Isn't it? And then the third turning point, which was very public, very much about her own moral compass, the Marian Anderson incident in 1939.
Ah, yes, the DR controversy.
That's the one. The Daughters of the American Revolution refused to let Marian Anderson, the celebrated black contralto, sing in their Constitution Hall in D.C., purely because she was African American.
Just blatant discrimination.
Blatant. And Eleanor found it morally indefensible. So what does she do? She publicly resigns from the DR, a huge statement at the time.
Making national news.
Big time. And she didn't stop there. She worked with Harold Ikes, the Secretary of the Interior, to arrange an alternative concert.
On the steps of the Lincoln Memorial.
Yes, an incredibly symbolic location. And 75,000 people showed up. Interracial crowd. It was immense.
Wow.
This event really cemented her public identity. She became seen as this leading white ally in the fight for racial justice. It showed she wasn't afraid to take a powerful, controversial stand using her First Lady platform directly for justice.
A real declaration of her principles.
Absolutely. No ambiguity there.
Core philosophy and values.
So these experiences, this journey, how did they shape her core philosophy? What really drove her worldview?
Well, at its heart was what Cook calls radical empathy. It wasn't abstract. It was visceral, born from her own pain. She felt the suffering of others.
Does that make sense, given her childhood?
Totally. And this empathy fueled a kind of pragmatic, progressive idealism. She believed democracy wasn't just a system. It was a moral commitment.
A commitment to what?
To actively fight for justice, especially for the vulnerable. She believed government could be a force for good, but, and this is key, policy had to have a human face.
Which is why she traveled so much, to see things firsthand.
Exactly. Her constant trips across the country during the Depression, visiting miners, sharecroppers, people in slums, it grounded the New Deal policies in lived reality. She brought those stories back to FDR.
She famously said, "Where, after all, do universal human rights begin? In small places, close to home."
Right. Highlighting that these grand ideas mean nothing if they don't change things in people's everyday lives and their communities.
And what about her personal motivations? What kept her going? Cook points to a few things.
Yeah, several intertwined drivers. One was this deep, lifelong need to be useful.
Stemming from those childhood fears of being a burden, maybe.
Very likely. That fear of being unloved, unwanted. Usefulness was her way of securing her place, perhaps. Of earning affection, even respect. It translated into this relentless drive to do something about the problem she saw.
And there was also a profound need for connection.
Yes, a deep need for love and intimacy. Since the emotional core of her marriage was gone, she built what Cook calls a community of affection. These incredibly intense, supportive friendships, especially with women like the journalist Lorena Hickok.
The nature of that relationship with Hickok is something Cook explores in detail, right?
Yeah.
Suggesting a romantic element.
Cook presents compelling evidence for a passionate, possibly romantic, intimacy. It's debated by historians, but central to Cook's portrait of Eleanor living outside conventional boundaries, seeking deep emotional connection wherever she could find it.
And finally, just this unwavering passion for justice.
Absolutely. A real moral indignation fueled her. She felt her privilege wasn't something to be enjoyed passively. It obligated her to fight for those who had none.
It paints a picture of someone deeply driven, not just by intellect, but by emotion and moral conviction.
Precisely. And her approach to adversity was remarkable. She didn't crumble. When faced with betrayal, criticism, setbacks, she somehow metabolized it. Turned it into strength.
Renegotiated her life, as you said earlier.
Exactly. Carved out her independence, developed that famous skin as thick as a rhinoceros's hide. She just kept moving forward, focused on the work.
Which brings us to how she revolutionized the First Lady role itself. She dreaded it initially, didn't she?
Hated the idea of just being a hostess. She refused to be confined to the traditional, purely social aspects of the role.
So how does she change it?
Fundamentally, she became the administration's roving ambassador, its conscience, really. Traveling constantly, reporting back to FDR, her syndicated newspaper column, My Day, brought her observations and concerns directly to millions of Americans. Daily.
And the press conferences, that was unheard of.
Completely. And she held press conferences open only to female reporters.
Why only women?
It was a strategic move during the Depression. News organizations were firing women first. By making her press conferences women only, she forced outlets to keep women journalists on staff to cover the First Lady. Clever, right?
That's incredibly shrewd. And all the while advocating for things like anti-lynching laws, supporting the Tuskegee Airmen.
Always pushing. Constantly using her access and influence, she wasn't just reflecting the New Deal. Cook argues she was a co-architect of its spirit, always pushing FDR and the administration to be bolder, more inclusive, more compassionate.
Human lessons and reflection.
It's an amazing trajectory. When you step back and look at her whole life, what are some of the big human lessons we can take away? Things that resonate even today.
Well, one powerful lesson is about the transmutation of pain. Her life shows how profound personal suffering, that deep insecurity and loss, doesn't have to be the end of the story.
It can be fuel.
It can absolutely be fuel. For her, it became the source of that incredible empathy, that drive to connect with and fight for others who were suffering. It teaches us, I think, that our vulnerabilities can actually become our strengths.
That's a really hopeful message.
Yeah, what else? Resilience, definitely. She faced immense obstacles, the constraints on women at the time, political opposition, vicious personal attacks, her own insecurities.
The patriarchy, the press, the KKK.
Right. Yet she didn't retreat. She learned, she adapted, she developed that thick skin, and she kept going. It shows that resilience isn't about not getting knocked down. It's about getting back up, maybe differently, but always moving forward.
And finding your own voice, even when you start out feeling voiceless.
Exactly. Her journey from that painfully shy girl to a global spokesperson for human rights is maybe the ultimate lesson in personal growth and the courage to become who you are meant to be, even if it defies expectations.
It really connects to that universal experience of overcoming fear and self-doubt. We all face that in different ways.
We do. And her life suggests that courage isn't the absence of fear. She felt fear, certainly, but it's choosing to act despite the fear again and again because your convictions demand it.
Three final takeaways.
So as we wrap up this deep dive into Eleanor Roosevelt's extraordinary life, let's crystallize some key takeaways based on Cook's work.
Okay, let's start with an emotional insight.
Mm-hmm.
Eleanor's transformation shows us something profound, that our greatest vulnerabilities, like her deep sensitivity to pain and insecurity, can actually become the source of our deepest strengths, in her case, that radical empathy and unwavering conviction. Our wounds can become our wisdom.
That's beautifully put. What about an intellectual takeaway?
I think the crucial intellectual insight is that we must see Eleanor Roosevelt not just as a first lady, but as a skilled, radical political operative with her own agenda, her own power base, separate from FDR's. She redefined power for women in politics, not as top-down control, but as moral influence, advocacy, and acting as the progressive conscience of her time.
Right, fundamentally shifting how we understand that role and female political leadership. And finally, a universal lesson.
For me, the universal insight is about courage and action. Her life is a powerful reminder that courage isn't a feeling, it's a choice. It's the daily decision to act on your values despite fear, despite opposition. It's speaking up when silence is easier, standing with the vulnerable, and understanding that progress requires persistent, dedicated effort from individuals. Outro.
In our current moment, with so much political division and ongoing struggles for human rights, Eleanor Roosevelt's legacy feels incredibly relevant. Her commitment to dialogue, to international cooperation, and her fierce defense of the marginalized offer, perhaps, a timeless roadmap for how we might navigate our own challenges with courage and compassion. Her life powerfully reminds us that progress isn't guaranteed. Individuals must fight for it.
A truly remarkable life.
If this deep dive has sparked your curiosity, we highly recommend exploring Blanche Friesen Cook's 3-volume biography, Eleanor Roosevelt, for an unparalleled look into her life, or delve into her own My Day columns for a direct window into her mind and heart. Closing narration, exact text. Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Accotra Foundation.